Apricot stone hidden in my hand. Give them back to me from the motherland. Apricot stone, I will drop it down in the frozen ground. I'll just let it make its round.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 268 of the Metabolers 2 podcast. And David, this week is the week for celebration. What are we covering this week?
Ben, we are celebrating the Interstellar Song Contest.
Oh my goodness, the Interstellar Song Contest, you're joking.
Yes, it's the penultimate story, I guess, for the second Gatwa season.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Live from Harmony Arena, I believe.
With yes. Hellion Poppies, I guess.
Exactly. Yes.
We didn't see the little girl, Poppy, but we had Poppies nonetheless.
We did. Indeed.
So probably before we go into it, we probably should just address the...
Elephant.
We've been on hiatus. Yeah,
Elephant. We have been on hiatus.
Two months since we recorded. I've had some life changes that I don't really want to go into now, but moving forward, and just that's sometimes life throws you a curve. Or do you have curves in cricket? What would be the equivalent of a British when you American says life throws you a curve?
Oh, I don't know. Life, I don't think we have an equivalent, to be honest. When life, I don't know, googly, it's probably a googly.
A googly, okay.
You get bowled a googly. I mean, you'd have to like be someone who's really into cricket for that to be something that's... I mean, googly isn't a curveball, but I guess it's a trick ball that's hard to hit. Yes, is what a googly is. Yeah.
When life bowls you a googly,
apparently
you do your best with it. So
you've got to try and fend off that ball as best you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
So anywho.
We're back.
Yes, Interstellar Song Contest. You're a big fan of Eurovision.
I am a huge fan of Eurovision. We used to watch it religiously when I was a child, and then intermittently when I was a post-child. Mm-hmm. But then since we had children, we've been trying to watch it every year. In fact, again, it's another instance of... I think I've anecdoted about this before. In the early days of when we moved to America, my sister, very kindly, would send us VCR videotapes of Doctor Who, which she recorded from the television. Mm-hmm. She would also send us videotapes of the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, that was nice.
Which is a far more of a labor of love because it goes on for fucking ages. I don't know if our listener has ever watched the Eurovision Song Contest, but it does go on for a long time, especially back in the day when the voting was kind of sclerotic in the extreme. But it's a huge amount of fun. I love it. It's brilliant. Everyone comes together and they sing a song, and it's just trashy and stupid, which, you know.
So the question is, does the Interstellar Song Contest live up to the Eurovision Song Contest?
Well, it's a lot shorter. There's that.
Only 47 minutes long.
Exactly. I don't know how they managed to squeeze in all of the planets of the galaxy, I suppose, that are part of the contest. I was upset to see none of the delegates from the Daleks Master Plan were involved. That was very upsetting to see. They weren't singing songs.
Well, wasn't that one singer at the beginning kind of like Melfa, though?
Oh. Again, you've got a better memory for listener. I saw this when it was released a couple of months ago.
Yes,
and we don't have Disney Plus anymore because, of course, I dumped that like a
hot potato.
The hot potato is a good thing though. I dumped that quickly as soon as Doctor Who was done. So I've not really been able to refresh my memory. So there was a Malfa at the beginning. That's amazing. I'm glad there was.
Well, I'm not sure that it was, but one of the singers that opened up the song contest right before the disaster or the terrorist attack happened.
Terrorist attack, yeah.
Kind of had the same facial patterns of Malfa, I believe.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay. They had Ryan, what's his name, Ryan Clark.
Yeah, is that a thing? To me, it seemed like if you weren't enmeshed in British culture right now, I guess he's a thing, but he's not a thing for me.
Ryan Clark is definitely a post when I left the UK thing, and I actually only know about Ryan Clark because he was a guest on Would I Lie to You, which is a comedy show that we like to watch.
Okay.
And then it was like, who the hell is that? What's wrong with his teeth? And then I looked him up, and he won like one of those singing contest shows back in 2012 or something, and is now a presenter.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, I didn't really know who he was. But I knew who he was when I watched this, but I hadn't known that before. So Graham Norton always does the kind of commentary for the Eurovision Song Contest. And, of course, Graham Norton's got form with Doctor Who because he was there in the very first episode of New Who.
Yes.
And he replaced Terry Wogan, Sir Terry Wogan, who was the kind of classic Eurovision Song Contest commentator. He was a Radio 2 DJ, mm-hmm. and he had his own chat show, early evening chat show on the BBC back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And he had this kind of Irish kind of take the piss out of the whole thing commentary, and kind of Graham Norton is also Irish, of course. Mm-hmm. And he also kind of takes the piss out of the whole thing, which is what we like. There was a ballad, there was a stupid song, the whole Dug-a-Doo thing, which everybody seems to have really latched onto.
Was that the one with the little trumpet animals?
Yeah.
Singers?
Yeah. I mean, typically the kind of less good countries of Europe, sorry, Moldova, but you know who you are.
Not the powerhouses.
Not the singing powerhouses of Europe, like Ireland or France or Greece
or Sweden
or Sweden or Finland. Finland have done well in past years. One of the less good countries often don't really understand the assignment, as I think the kids say nowadays, and go off on a wild tangent. My wife and I still often play Apricot Stone by Armenia, which was from the, ooh, I think that was 2012, 2015, I think, Apricot Stone, which is an absolute banger, but an incredibly weird song. When Russia was still in the Eurovision Song Contest, one year they had a bunch of grannies, did a kind of Russian folk song, and they were kind of dancing to it. That was crazy. Germany did one where everybody, Dieter von Teese, like, stripped her clothes off, and the man was wearing, the singer was wearing a silver trousers. There's a lot of cross-dressing. There were some space centurions from Ukraine. Ukraine always come up. I mean, before the war, Ukraine were always absolutely solid. You wanted, like, a crazy, stupid good time. And, of course, Moldova... those of you who know your memes will be aware of Awesome Sax Guy. And Awesome Sax Guy, as far as I remember, was the sax player for one of the songs that Moldova did in the kind of mid-2010s. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there you go. So, Awesome Sax Guy.
So the Dug-a-Doo song, going back to Interstellar Song Contest.
Right. Absolutely tracks. Yeah, absolutely tracks.
So... I think we left last episode saying that Murray Gold was going to have to, he was hard pressed. He had to come up with four different Eurovision songs. And I think we only really heard the ballad that the
Hellions did, yeah.
With Cora St. Bevier singing the character's name.
Right.
And it was just, I don't know, it was in a made up language. And yeah, I guess maybe did it have the ballad vibe of Eurovision?
Yeah, because, I mean, Eurovision tends to... I mean, I'm not an expert. I just really like it, that's all. Mm-hmm. I mean, Eurovision tends to... There's, like, three modes of Eurovision. One is the boring ballad.
Right. Check.
Two is the obscure kind of folk song from the country.
Okay.
You know, okay, don't know what's going on here, but I guess they're this makes sense to people who are from Moldova. And then three, it's the kind of idiot Euro disco.
Right.
And those are the kind of three modes as far as, you know, I mean, that's, I mean, there are outliers. I mean, there's the Lordi, famous, the band from Finland, who dressed up as monsters,
right.
Like Gwar. They did like a kind of a heavy metal Hallelujah. Was that one? I can't remember. Anyway, so, yeah, but by and large, there's three different modes. So there's the ballad. So they had the ballad. They had the insane Euro disco, which is Dug-a-Doo. Mm-hmm. And I guess, did they have something that was a bit like a folk song?
They might have with the Melfa character at the beginning. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to look for, so it just...
Well, it's a chance for you to go back and watch it again.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I was so reading up on this, I saw that the writer of this, who is Juno Dawson...
Yes.
The pitch was a cross between Die Hard and Eurovision.
Yeah.
Which it kind of was, right?
I guess. A terrorist attack at a big, song contest. So, yeah.
Literally, the song contest. Yeah, true. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it had an interesting cast of characters. It kind of reminded me of a lot of Dungeons & Dragons type. I guess the Hellions reminded me of some kind of D&D type character. I couldn't help but wonder if the Poppies was there because Poppy Honey was there because we had a character named Poppy, if that some kind of ties in. And
which was Poppy Honey? You're going to have to refresh.
Poppy Honey was what the, quote, corporation bought Hellion for.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it wasn't even for the honey. It was for the flavor. And then they torched the entire planet.
Right.
And basically took away the honey because they could, I don't know, produce the flavor synthetically or something. I don't know. It really felt to me like the Eurovision junk drawer of Doctor Who, where you were... nothing really fit well together for me.
Yeah, I'll rewind for a second. So the Hellion song that the Hellions sing at the end.
Yes.
That's the folk song.
Oh, that's the folk song. Okay.
Yeah, that's the folk song. Because, okay. You know, it's the ape. Because so the kind of touchstone for Amanda and I is Apricot Stone, mm-hmm. which is this Armenian entry from whenever that was. And that's been sung in Armenian, and it's about apricots. And if you know anything about Armenia, apparently they're really into apricots. So if you're Armenian, it's like, oh, apricots, cool. Oh, it makes me miss Armenia. But if you're not Armenian, you go like, why the hell are they singing about apricots? So again, I mean, I think actually where they sing a song about Helia and, I don't know, their lost planet and, I don't know, honey and stuff, that's the kind of the similar one to real life Eurovision.
Okay.
If you want my analysis there, which I guess is what you do, because you do want that, because this is what this is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's analysis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Carry on. Yes.
So I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of it. It just seemed it really seemed to be like a, if you knew Eurovision, you would know what's going on in the story. To me, it seemed like, okay, we're kind of in a Star Wars setting where you got the Mos Eisley cantina with all the aliens.
Right.
But it could be like, I don't know, in the Galactic Senate or whatever they have in Star Wars, where they have different races or species of aliens all coming together for something.
Right.
And I don't know, you have Daft Punk android killers or something, and you have a couple that are perfectly matched for what they need to do in the adventure. One's the expert in holography, and the other one's a nurse who totally sidelines Belinda because, well, Belinda doesn't know the space medicine of the contemporary of the 830th or whatever European song, or the interstellar, yeah, whatever number it is, 800 plus, and then why not throw in Susan Foreman, and why not have the Ronnie in, because why not?
So here's the thing that I skated over, actually. Mm-hmm. You've never seen the Eurovision Song Contest, have you?
Not in its full. I've seen, probably my closest is I watched ABBA's performance of Waterloo back in, what, 74?
Yeah, that's kind of early days. Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, are you even aware of it as a thing?
Yeah, I am, because it disrupts Doctor Who, or it disrupted Doctor Who in the 2000s.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because it was a thing that was on. And it's just
it was a thing that was on, yes. It definitely was a thing that was on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not something that, you know, every May, at the end of every May, you sit down to watch with excitement.
Nope.
And why should it be? Because it's Europe, and most of it isn't very good, which is kind of the point. I think they tried to do an American version, But again, it's, I mean, America doesn't really work like that. You don't really have separate countries. You have states, and they're all kind of the same.
And then it'd be 50 of them, and that would be really long.
Well, no, well, I mean, it is. I mean, the thing about the Eurovision Song Contest is there are several heats. So there's two heats before you get to the final. So what you see on the telly is the final. So what you think is, wow, this is shit. It's actually, it's the best of several heats. Because obviously there's a lot of countries. I mean, when I first started watching Eurovision Song Contest, you know, in the 70s, I mean, there weren't that many countries in Europe, because most of the countries in Europe were ruled by the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And also, there were fewer countries in general. As soon as the Balkan War happened, and like, ew, it's Croatia, it's Bosnia-Herzegovina, it's Moldova, it's the Czech Republic, it's Slovakia, it's the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. You get all these kind of nutty little countries kind of erupting. It's Albania. Albania used to be the best, because, of course, Albania took a long time to become a modern country, and they still don't really get it. Okay. Sorry, Albanians who are listening. So it's become quite a beast, actually, to kind of whittle it down to the 30 or so countries that they actually have on the evening. So actually, you talk about 50 states. Well, that's fine, because you just have a couple of heats and you get rid of the states like Delaware quickly, and just end up with, you know, Texas and some other states. I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be come down to New York, Texas, Florida, and California.
It would be various varieties of hip hop versus country music is what
basically,
the American
probably.
Song Contest would be. Yep. And it would be just... And it would be as unpleasant as that sounds to my ears. So, yeah, but I mean, I mean, spoiler alert, if you think this is a grab bag, you just wait.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. It is a grab bag. I mean, it fitted together pretty well, I guess. I like the Eurovision Song Contest kind of envelope for it. I think it is interesting that... You know, I mean, when were they filming? They were filming this in like 2023, I think. And even back then, they knew that it would be broadcast on the 17th of May, 2025. I mean, it is actually kind of interesting to me that even around all of the inferred shenanigans around this second season, that actually some of these dates were set like a long time ago. I mean, I think obviously because the incessant drumbeat of this second season is May the 24th being the penultimate episode.
Right.
So obviously way back when they were filming this, you know, some of this in 2023, they knew that the penultimate episode of this would be broadcast on May the 24th, 2025. Right.
Did it really go back that far? I thought it was only last year that they were filming, because 2023 was still like Giggle and that kind of stuff.
So. I was reading something in Doctor Who magazine, and I can't remember what it was now, helpfully, but they were talking about, I think it might have been Joe Martin talking about her cameo in the Store and the Engine, and she said that she did that in 2023.
So they've been working on it forever. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think post-production on these is just insane.
This had a lot of post-production, obviously.
Exactly. So I mean, I thought that envelope worked well. I mean, you're right about, you know, everybody had the right skills to do the plot correctly. I mean, that's sort of Die Hard a little bit, I suppose. I thought the Doctor, you know, really being mean to the Hellions was...
Yeah, especially after the preceding story with the redemption arc of the barber and the forgiveness, and then not having that opportunity. I mean, yes, maybe the stakes were a little higher, rather killing gods, imaginary gods versus 3 trillion people around the galaxy. But
I thought it was weird in two ways. One of which is that's not really how the Doctor behaves usually. It's very undoctory in my understanding of the character. But then also, these people were planning to kill 3 trillion people, which is, I mean, yes, we come from a show where, you know, Terry Nation talks about it's the 6 galaxies, you know, and like size is not something. Oh, there's 10,000 Daleks on this planet. It's a lot, which actually is not many at all. So we come from a show where size is a kind of a flexible concept. However, 3 trillion is a lot of people, and that's insanely ambitious in terms of mass murder, and therefore it probably also deserves more punishment than they got.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
But it doesn't need to be the doctor medding
exactly.
it out.
Exactly. No, I agree. It's not what the doctor does. The doctor doesn't do that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe it's because it wasn't written by a showrunner.
I kind of feel like that was RTD's stamp on it.
That was RTD's? Really?
I mean, Juno Dawson got sole writing credit on it, so it could be all Dawson's work.
Right. The Hellions, they didn't seem evil enough to want to kill 3 trillion people, and they didn't seem to be evil enough for the doctor to like go off on one on them either. I mean, they seem to be sort of okay people, in which case if they were okay then they wouldn't have wanted to kill so many people, and also the doctor wouldn't have been so mean to them if they were just like, you know, kind of emo kids with horns,
right.
Which is kind of what they were
in a way.
Yeah. I don't know.
And I didn't like Belinda's reaction either. I mean, she was saying this isn't who the doctor is, etc., and then like no accountability, like what the hell were you doing? What, you know, what is, they were just, instead it was you're wonderful at the end there, and it didn't seem like the doctor had to pay any consequence. Now, maybe that's going to set up for next time, but if this was even earlier in RTD's writing, or if, you know, like in, it's not RTD script, but with Dalek, you know, with Rose saying to the Eccleston doctor, that may be the case, but the Dalek isn't the one pointing a gun at me type thing. And I felt like it was shortchanging the emotional impact that Belinda could have had with on the doctor, sort of like, what are you doing? This is not you. And that was missing.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere, and it kind of went into nowhere. It was just a kind of a thing that happened in the
moment.
It was a short passage of things something that happened in the show. It didn't have a lead up. It didn't have a lead out. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the weeping doctor. This is the doctor who emotes.
Right.
Who's sympathy for everybody. You know, yes, these Hellions, which again, they kind of have a Terry Nation name. You know, they're called Hellions. And they raise hell, and they've got horns like devils might have.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so these Hellions, you know, I mean, they have an evil plan. You know, wanting to kill 3 trillion people is impressively evil. But this doctor is a doctor who sees the good in all alien monsters. And I guess it would be hard to see the good in someone who wants to kill 3 trillion people. But, you know, they've had their planet destroyed by an evil company. Maybe 3 trillion people deserve to die for that. I was, you know, without getting political, as we're not really supposed to anymore, you know, I was sort of expecting for this to drift into kind of Gaza territory. Like, you know, if you've had a great wrong done to you, what rights do you have to do great wrongs to other people or to the people who've done you wrong?
Yeah, at the time Dawson was writing this, if that, you know, that was two,
if it is
two,
2023,
three, yeah, yeah, 2 years ago, or
but I mean, again, I guess my point still stands. Even before October the 7th, whenever it was, 2024, right? When did this whole storm kick off?
End of 2023, I think.
It was end of 2023, but I mean, there's still, you know, like, what is the right of revenge between the Palestinian people and the Jewish people in Palestine? Mm-hmm. And that is something that goes all the way back to 1946. And, you know, this could have been a... I was expecting to be something about that, and of course it wasn't in the end at all.
Yeah.
I don't think. Anyway, yeah.
I guess the contrast is it's not okay to kill 3 trillion people in revenge, but it is okay to sing your culturally appropriate folk song and then win the audience over. And
that makes your attempt to kill 3 trillion people all right.
Because you cried.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and they go, oh, you tried to kill us, but now we're sorry for you.
Yeah, I mean, different Hellion. One was, I guess, Kid and Nina.
And the other is like the secret Hellion. But, yeah. I mean, you know, if everyone hates Hellions, everyone hates Hellions. And they're not going to be, 3 trillion people aren't going to be suddenly won over because one Hellion sings a nice song about Hellia.
Yeah. And the other bit, I mean, so the doctor's behavior at the end I thought was uncharacteristic, and maybe that's the point. But at the end of the song, it was either Mike or Gary who started clapping. And I think in a more conventionally portrayed Doctor Who story with the Doctor, it would have been the Doctor who was leading the applause at the beginning.
Yeah.
They would have been the first to clap.
Right. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I think you're right. I'll have to say also, I'm sorry, I mean, I like Charles Condu, but every time I see him in anything, he just reminds me of his character Jonathan Yeh in Nathan Barley, and I find it really hard to see him as anyone else because that was such a strong character. If none of you have seen the comedy series Nathan Barley, I advise you to do so, and you will see plenty of Charlie Condu in that show. That's just my sidebar and my push for people to watch Nathan Barley.
So was his character Gary different from his character?
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, Jonathan Yeh is this extraordinarily horrible character. And it's like, it's Jonathan Yeh. I hate him. And it's not. It's like, ooh, it's lovely, lovely gay husband man. There's the character who's playing in this one. And also, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Susan. We're both longtime fans of the show. Pleased to see Susan back?
Not really.
Question mark? Not
no,
really.
No, I mean.
Not really. She's a bit old.
Does this show do well with returning companions? I don't know. I mean, I have mixed feelings of even with Liz Sladen coming back and reprising her role as Sarah Jane Smith. I'm glad that she got another swing at it, and I think the Sarah Jane Adventures are very reminiscent of classic Doctor Who in many ways, but beyond Liz's reprisal of Sarah, I'm not sure that any of the other returns have been that warranted or good. And so I approach next week's beginning of the two-parter with trepidation.
Yeah, it's weird. I basically agree with you. I think one of the things that's interesting about New Who is it does, and I think I've said this before, it does provide extraordinary opportunities for late middle-aged women to have major roles, which is something that obviously, you know, the classic Who didn't do. I did a little bit of, maybe more than was usual at the time, and obviously New Who, the Doctor's companion is still a young girl. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we get all these kind of sort of feisty old ladies turn up doing stuff, and I think that's good. I think it's I think that's a good representation, and it's unusual representation in kind of mainstream popular sci-fi fantasy. However, and you know, we can talk about the kind of the reveal at the end of this episode and whether we think that's good or bad. Mm-hmm. You wonder whether the fan service to it's Susan, and it's the actual Susan from the 60s. Mm-hmm. The same actor, the kind of joy that we get from that, limited as it is, as you've just pointed out, cannot be anything of interest to the casual viewer, really, at all. Especially, you know, the American casual viewer here has already been like, what the fuck is the Eurovision Song Contest? And like, what's that old woman doing appearing in the Doctor's dreams? Who the hell is that? His mother?
Well, not when she's saying grandfather.
Exactly. What the hell? So, you know, and as much as, you know, Caroline Ford really doesn't do any acting anymore unless she's doing it for Big Finish.
Right.
And, you know, it's nice to see her get a chance to do some acting. I'm not sure that it's helpful plot-wise.
Yeah, I think a lot of times with Modern Who, where I land personally is I would have run the season arc differently. I would have done something differently. This recursive self-referential callback type stuff, I don't think it's very interesting compared to like the freshness of the first Eccleston series, where you didn't really hint, you just hinted and you had very limited reprisals of historical monsters or stories, companions, right, whatever. And it just seems like it's folding in on itself.
Yeah, it's a chronic hysteresis of some kind, surely. I agree. I would have said we're using the back catalogue in the wrong way. I would have found it to be exciting and funny, which I think is what. So for me as a fan, it's exciting. For non-fans, it's funny. If the singers in the Eurovision Song Contest had been, Zygons and Daleks. I mean, imagine some Daleks coming on, like singing a Dalek song. That'd be hilarious. I would have loved it. Fans would have liked it. Ha ha, Daleks are silly. You know, new fans are like, ha ha, Daleks are silly. Casual watchers, those are silly creatures. You know, I mean, I think that would have worked very nicely. I also wonder, you know, we have this amazing back catalogue of villains. Do we have to come up with Hellions? Could we come up with, I don't know, Earth colonists or something? Or, I don't know. We got so many humanoid aliens that we could use at this point to be, people from a planet who are feeling aggrieved. I don't know why we have to. I guess they had to have their horns sawn off. That kind of. But I mean, they could be demons. They could be
Spiridons.
They could be Spiridons. They could be invisible. They could be like early demons from like before demons were, you know, a big thing.
Right.
But to kind of wheel on is the wrong word. I apologize, Carol Ann. I didn't mean that. But you know, to have her kind of wander on, dressed in her contemporary what Susan wears nowadays clothes. And, you know, go grandfather. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, recast her. Have a young Susan come on and go like grandfather. And then when we get to actual Susan, minus spoilerish alert, maybe in subsequent episodes, then it can be old Susan. I don't know. I mean,
it's a mix.
It doesn't work.
And it just seems like a hodgepodge of what's going on here in the story, and you add the Susan Foreman cameos in there, and they didn't have the limiting factor. I guess the whole point was to introduce Susan Foreman, or Susan's back, but
right.
Was she trying to be the conscience of the doctor, some kind of governor on his behavior? This is the Catherine Tate. This is the Donna Noble role of you go too far when you don't have someone with you.
Right.
But the doctor went too far, and he has someone with him.
He's perfectly able to pull him up.
But Belinda didn't, and the script didn't allow Belinda to do it, and the doctor went pretty far on this,
right.
I guess. I think it's the torture aspect, I think, is what was the most disturbing. Not that he would kill or cause pain or something, but it's the whole thing of hurt people hurt, and the doctor obviously has been hurt, and he referenced that his whole planet has been destroyed in a blink of an eye.
Right.
I just wonder if that is being used to explain this character change or development in the doctor, where he is seeking some kind of revenge.
Well, if anybody knows the futility of revenge, it's got to be the doctor, because that has always been something that has been presented by the show as being futile.
Yeah.
And as you say, hurt people hurt, you know, and yeah, that's one of the kind of foundational foundations of the show.
Yeah. And it's also reminiscent of the Tenant, you know, Time Lord Triumphant or whatever.
Yeah, victorious. Yeah.
Victorious, yes. And it just, with the arrogance.
Which is a callback to previous RTD. And also, I didn't think it worked. That was a thing that RTD talked about and didn't really, I didn't really actually came out in the show that well. It's not good. Doesn't work. It didn't work last time, in my opinion.
It's recycling. It's not a new idea. And I think Davis must feel very strongly that the Doctor is somehow flawed in this regard. And, he might have been doing this with Eccleston if Eccleston had stuck around longer. So he's cast True. Three Doctors now, and two of them have had this arrogance.
But it's an unfortunate kind of Snyder cut sort of, I don't like superheroes, I don't like Superman, etc., but, I've read a lot about how, DC kind of dropped the ball with their Zack Snyder Superman movies because Superman, out of the gate, was evil, or not evil, but was arrogant and kind of was a Superman, an Ubermensch of some kind. And
right.
What people really wanted is, like, Christopher Reeve Superman to come back, which is kind of like a fumbly, nice man who's out to save everybody. And I think,
right.
I think really, we want the Doctor to be... to be nice and helpful and solving problems rather than making more problems. I don't really want the Doctor to be all tortured and like, I'm a lonely god of some kind,
Right.
I don't really want that. I mean, it's fine maybe for a couple of minutes at the beginning of Pyramids of Mars or 30 seconds at the beginning of Pyramids of Mars, but it's not what the show's about.
No.
Really.
Not for me, at least. It's just...
Or me, yeah.
So I guess that kind of leads into the bi-regeneration of the Ronnie. Effectively, Mrs. Flood is the Ronnie. And
apparently,
instead of bi-regeneration becoming equals, Mrs. Flood just becomes more of a henchman or a crony, a stooge, a flunky.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like, hang on. I thought bi-regeneration was something that never really happened that much, and now it's happening again. So that wasn't... that didn't work for me. And then, yeah, it's like, hang on. The senior bi-regenerated Time Lord, like, goes off and lives as a South of France with all their mates.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, like, then sort of... I mean, I guess it's a villain bi-regeneration, so maybe it's different. But, that didn't make sense at all to me. And what then triply didn't make sense? Okay, if Mrs. Flood has been the Rani all along...
Right.
Then what's with all the breaking the first fourth wall to camera malarkey?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that a thing that the Rani does? I'm not sure that it is the thing that the Rani does. And how has the Rani been following the Doctor sort of around, mm-hmm. though actually the Rani was following Ruby Sunday first, and then also speaking to the audience at the same time? It doesn't make sense.
I'm assuming destroying the Earth is the Rani's plan, but since when did the Rani become kind of a lightweight master? I mean, she has always just been more, I want to get on with my experiment, my interest, rather than get caught up in these machinations.
Exactly. The Rani is not the master.
Right.
The Rani is a scientist.
An amoral
rationalist.
Scientist.
Yep. She's an amoral, like making beagles smoke 20 packs of cigarettes a day and wiring up guinea pigs to the mains kind of sign. She's a horrible, horrible scientist is what she is.
Mm-hmm.
What in this is horrible science? She wasn't doing horrible science as Mrs. Flood. Why mm-hmm. would she call Mrs. Flood? Why would she call Mrs. Rani?
I don't know.
Or Mrs.,
Ronnie let's Chandra.
let's go with the master idea. And why would she call whatever Punjabi is for Flood? Exactly. So that it. Spoiler alert, this is where it all starts to fall apart, I'm afraid. So, you're in for mm-hmm. a bumpy ride. I'm really curious to see how you deal with the finale. But my initial reaction was like, oh cool, yeah, Rani. People have been asking about the Rani to come back for ages. But then it was like, well, hang on, none of this makes sense
mm-hmm.
within the envelope of the show.
We've been asking for the monk to return. We've been asking for lots of things to return. Peladon, a return to Peladon, for example. But
that would have been cool.
That it would have been nice to see some badger-headed miners singing in the Eurovision.
I would have loved to have had Peloponnese miners sing the song of the Peloponnese miners. That would have been awesome, and I would have been 100% on board for that. Didn't happen. I'm angry.
Or Alpha Centauri. I mean, you could have had
more callback
monsters or aliens.
Exactly, which would have made me happy, and it would have been silly, so it would have made people who aren't me also happy. But having, I don't know, yes, anyway, so, I think the Rani actor looks good.
Archie Panjabi?
She seems to be, at the very least, have a origin in the Indian subcontinent, which is more than the original Rani did, even though she called herself the Rani. So that's a plus.
Mm-hmm.
But
Kate O'Mara is not known for her connections to India.
No, apart from maybe her family probably ruled bits of it. It was really like, okay, hang on. I'm sort of pleased the Rani's back because they're a fun character. I don't understand why Mrs. Flood was the Rani, because Mrs. Flood did not act like the Rani. She didn't call herself the Rani. Mm-hmm. She acted like some, as we've been talking about all the way through this season, there's some omnipotent kind of story universe thing, and
right.
You know, the Doctor is trapped in the land of fiction and she's the guardian of fiction or something, which would be really cool and interesting and fun, and no, it's the Rani.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're getting too recursive, and
right,
I think prohibits new ideas, perhaps, because we have to name check or reference
right
older storylines. And yeah, we have new alien species coming in with the Hellions, but they're not that original either. So
no, and they're kind of, I mean, the Hellions, I said they look like emo kids. I mean what, actually the first thing I thought that the Hellions were going to be when the Hellions came on is I thought they were going to be kind of, I don't know, like heavy metal fans or something who really hated the Eurovision Song Contest and wanted to kind of destroy it because it didn't fit with their idea of what music should be.
Hmm.
And then they weren't. So that my excitement about that maybe being a thing sort of didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've already had, I mean, sorry, I'm now extemporizing. We've already had a villain of music, a guardian of music has already turned up. Why weren't they back for the Eurovision Song Contest? RTD has thrown out these huge ideas of like the edge of the universe and, you know, the new pantheon of guardians and blah, 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 blah. Like, why aren't we going to do any of that? Why
right.
is it just the Rani?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, maybe we do that in the finale. Well, wait and see.
Maybe we will.
Wait and see. Yeah, wait and see. Any road. So that's what I think. And I think you sort of agree with me, don't you, really?
I was looking at the clock during it. I just there wasn't anything really to latch on for me that I enjoyed in it. And I was hoping for you that it had enough Eurovision flavor to kind of carry you through it.
Oh, it had some good Eurovision flavor, and I enjoyed that. Like I said, I was, you know, disappointed in they didn't really go with the Eurovision thing as I thought they might. And, you know, and I'm not joking when I said that they should have had Peloponnesian miners, because that is absolutely Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned where Russia brought on some old grannies to sing an old granny song. It's happened in Eurovision. I mean, mm-hmm. Peloponnesian miners would have been perfect. They didn't do that. And I think the villain's plot was too much. I think 3 trillion people is too many people to kill. I'd have been happy with 1 billion.
Or even just everyone in the stadium. I think that
everyone in the stadium would have been fine. And which is what I was kind of thinking is that, you know, they're Ozzy Osbourne fans or something. You know, they're Black Sabbath. They want to, you know, they got horns, for God's sake. Of course they're metal fans. you know, that they were, you know, I don't know. But they're not. It's something else that's not as good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as good as it could be. None of this is good as it could be.
For me, it would probably have been more enjoyable if you just went with a straight Eurovision contest and someone was trying to manipulate the results to get a certain outcome and the Doctor stops it. And I guess it's
that would have been fine.
What I wish more for Doctor Who is more lower stakes, more behind the scenes, but everything just seems to have to get bigger and badder and
less is more. Yes, I agree.
And so now we're facing Graham Norton telling us the universe ended on May 25th or the, not, sorry, the Earth ended on May 25th or 24th, whatever day it is.
25th
and,
or 24th.
And that's it. And it's just sort of like, yeah, we're learning this on the planet of the Ming-Mongs, and we got to return back to Earth to save it. And it's just, I'm invested. Earth is my home world, but
yeah. And is it? It's not. It's that's not. I mean, again, the fun thing is, well, how Earth doesn't end on May the 24th, but it is a little bit boring to have that kind of, ooh, the Earth is going to end on May the 24th for like every episode, because mm-hmm. it's not going to end on May the 24th.
So, we always do this.
We do.
And we rewrite things. I think if you're going to do Interstellar Song Contest, I think I would have seeded that throughout the story arc rather than Mrs. Flood, and you'd see the competition unfolding if there's several heats. And you'd get different tastes of the of songs. And so you could include the Peladon Badger-Headed Miners in there. Yeah. It would tease it up to it. And yeah, okay, it's smaller stakes. But honestly, Doctor Who can't deal with the big stakes that really are facing us. And so we're inventing things like, okay, the whole world is going to get shattered. And I prefer smaller stakes when you can't really do the big stakes.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think the Doctor Who does do really good small steaks. We love small steaks on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It's a tasty kind of steak.
We look at last week, the previous story with the story in Engine. Honestly, that was pretty small steaks.
It was small steaks.
And I thought it was a stronger story with nice character moments and a moment of redemption for the barber who could go back from his plan.
Right.
And compared to kids over the top, I'm going to kill 3 trillion people because the corporation destroyed my planet, which understandably he's upset. I get that.
It's an overreaction.
But then it's all made better because Korra's saying the folk song and the people realize that poppy honey flavor is a bad thing.
I think having had 3 million people, 3 trillion people almost killed is going to outweigh everyone liking a song.
Yeah.
I think people are going to be still mad at the Hellions. That's my prediction.
Even though everyone lived and the cat woman seemed to hurt her eye.
Yeah, I think people are still going to be mad at them. That's my prediction.
And
in the real world.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. It kind of with the big audience, it kind of reminded me of the Rings of Akatan aliens.
Which is not my favorite.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mention that. I meant to, but that was not a favorite one of mine of the 11th Doctor's era, and it was reminding me of how much I didn't like that one. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't good. Yeah. Anyway.
So anyways, the Eurovision stuff itself was good. Beyond that, the Die Hard part, not good, and really a bad look for the Doctor being into torture. I don't know how you walk that one back.
Nope, it's not something that he generally approves of.
Nope.
If ever.
Mm-mm.
Well, there you go then.
All right.
Yeah, well, okay.
Thank you for listening to episode 268 of the Metabulous 2 Song Contest. It's not Song Contest. Metabulous 2 Podcast. I have been thinking about what song and alien race I would like to see in the Interstellar Song Contest with Ben.
Song Contest. And with David, I have been pleasantly reminiscing about Eurovision Song Contests of old and how it's always a fun time at the end of May when the Eurovision Song Contest is on.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think next time we'll just
finale.
Do the finale, do both parts and
just
see it as a whole.
See it as a whole. Yeah, as one big story. Yeah, I think spoiler alert, I've seen it already and I think that's just the way to do it.
All right.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well, goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye. Please welcome Dieter von Thiel. Miss Kiss.